Hello everyone, Joshua Gilliland here, one of the founding attorneys of The Legal Geeks, and I am in lovely Los Altos, California with my friend Neil Carretree, who is a partner at Goodwin, Star Trek fan, and we're here to discuss Discovery. Neil, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, thanks. It's a rainy day, but looking forward to podcasting.
Yeah, and talking about something that we both love. Star Trek.
Yep.
Neil did our, in 2016, for the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, we were at San Diego Comic-Con, and we did a big panel, and Neil was there in full Wrath of Khan uniform.
Sorry.
Mass props for that. That was so cool.
That was like one of the highlights so far in my law practice. It was a blast.
With Justice Quaylar and just being able to deep dive into whether or not Kirk had sentenced Khan to City Alpha 5. Classic stuff.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So with that, let's chat about all the goodness of Discovery Season 2. We're 3 episodes in. So the 3 episodes so far have included Brother, New Eden, and A Point of Light. And I'm ecstatic with the season. How do you feel about it so far?
I have really liked the season. And I love season one, but I really felt like season one was a great show, but it didn't feel like Star Trek. It wasn't necessarily about, finding new worlds and new civilizations and the tension of, what does it mean to be human? And I feel like in the second season, they're starting to find their legs on those issues.
Which... I have mixed feelings on season one. I watched it weekly. I was grateful to have it because I do love Star Trek. I felt the first half of the season was a little uneven. They were still figuring things out. Second half, when they got to the Mirror Universe, things really clicked.
Interesting.
Jonathan Frakes directed the first episode of the second half. So it's like they remembered how to make Star Trek. And I
think that's right. I also, one of the interesting things is that first season is so much of a study about Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole season feels like a character study and a character development about not necessarily knowing who she is. And I don't remember other Star Trek series being quite that way there's episodes about Data's humanity,
yeah,
and things like that, but not like a whole season dedicated to a person trying to figure out who they are and how they fit into an environment.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about on how to be creative with the new Star Trek series.
Right.
Because it's like, do you just repeat the same formula? What parts do you focus on?
Yeah.
I understand, let's not just do the same thing over again. Let's try to be creative. And I respect that.
Yeah, I do too. But I think like there's concepts like iconic characters, right? You have Spock in episode, in the original series.
Uh-huh.
In the next generation, you have Data, right? An iconic, totally different character, right? I guess I would say Deep Space Nine has like the Ferengi, right?
This, yeah.
Very interesting sort of characters. And I think that they're the iconic character that's going to develop in Discovery is Saru.
Agreed. Just because he's so different.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Short Treks?
I did not.
Okay. There is one with him on his origin, and it's very well done.
I'll go back and look at those.
Yeah, they're 15 minutes. Calypso is one of the other ones that I think is the best because it is so out there. It's pure Star Trek. It's everything good and noble about science fiction with a big idea.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I watch it, it's like, this is good. And the guy who wrote it is one of the showrunners or one of the lead writers on the Picard show.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I'm like super, just like with that sample, mm-hmm, it's like, okay, if he can deliver this, what's in store for us with Picard?
Yeah.
So again, grateful that we live in this time when Star Trek's back and all the other shows and movies that I grew up with are making wonderful appearances. Well, let's jump into Brother, which was... I think a great way to start season two with with the Enterprise showing up.
Right. And reintroduction of familiar names, mm-hmm. right? Which you'd heard a little bit about in season one, but season two, it kind of goes right into it.
They weren't teasing anymore. It wasn't right. like some oblique reference. It was, here's Captain Pike.
Right, exactly.
And I really like this version of Pike.
I really like this version of Pike. And the thing I loved about that first episode is I just had this feeling like maybe he actually wasn't a good guy at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I was waiting for something bad to happen. But then he ends up being like a super good guy and a very inclusive leader.
Yeah, it's from the hand scan.
Right.
To teasing Tilly about his finger, to asking all the bridge crew to introduce themselves. And it's like, forget your ranks, they're not important. It's like, oh, he's cool.
Yeah, he's cool.
He's confident. He goes back for Burnham when she's the one injured. It's just like, model leader.
Well, yeah, and I think the big refreshing take on him that was really people over rule,
mm-hmm.
right? He's always putting people first, that's just it's a really kind of fresh look, I think, at this whole thing. I mean, Kirk was like that, and Picard kind of became like that, but I think in this series, having someone like that is really good.
Right out of the gate, which I think is consistent with the character from his secondary materials.
Yeah.
Like some of the comics where, as his career progresses, like concerned about people and how he's ultimately injured, I think they're true. I like the fact when we learn in the second episode about his family, like his dad was a scientist and religious, so like and taught both. Right.
Yeah.
And so when an issue of faith comes up, he's prepared.
Yeah, he knows how to deal with it.
And whereas the other one's like, no, I'm not a believer. It's like, yeah, I've studied it. As opposed to having faith.
Yeah, and having it is part of his kind of cultural framework.
It's just refreshing.
Yeah.
Which is also a pivot from season one, because the original show writers, they were filming a scene, and it was the actor playing Lorca. Yell something to the, like, there's battle damage, and he said something like, Jesus, or,
right.
Which would be a normal reaction. And they came back and said, like, no, people would be beyond faith and beyond believing in God because of science. Well, clearly, that was the one who was, fired and gone.
Right, well, certainly from, episode two.
Yeah.
That's, completely out the window.
It's like, nope, faith is still around. It's like, yeah, that would make sense. Like, it wouldn't change. So it's like, seeing that in the context of a highly advanced civilization, that faith isn't completely abandoned, that you still have people with it, that's an interesting angle. Which, again, goes to our First Amendment of people have that right.
That's right. That's right.
So, just fun stuff. But with Brother, we have a crashed starship. And we have a very resourceful chief engineer who stayed with the sinking ship.
Right.
On this rock for 10 months looked like it was super not fun. And she jury-rigs a bunch of life-saving procedures to keep patients alive.
And some in pretty extreme ways.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those extreme ways. There was a bowling and heart in a jar that kept pumping, a guy's heart that had been destroyed because there was nothing to do a transplant with. Other extreme scientific.
Yeah, there's these giant containers that seem to have some kind of gas being pumped into it, and people are unconscious. And for all intents and purposes, the engineer is all alone, and all she's doing all the time is keeping these people alive who can't even communicate with her. And then she creates the boys. So.
Yeah, the little robots flying around. Again, talking to sock puppets after that amount of time would totally make sense.
Mm-hmm.
She seems to have given people nicknames, because the guy with the broken heart, his name really wouldn't be Valentine, so she's
right.
calling him Valentine, so it's like, okay, time has taken a toll.
But Because he has a heart.
Yeah. You know? it's like making up names for them. It's like, what are some of your thoughts on, you know, the emergency medicine by the engineer?
Well, you know, it's an interesting issue, right? Because she is fundamentally practicing medicine without having any medical credentials. And, you know, I think under normal law that might be considered malpractice, but, you know, there are all kinds of emergency exceptions for professionals that, you know, what's their alternative? Their alternative is death, right? And the person might be resuscitated and not like the fact that their heart is some other kind of organism, but hey, they're still alive.
You're still alive, and when we get to a real hospital, we can fix this.
Presumably.
Yeah, hopefully, as opposed to like, yeah, I thought it'd be better to leave you dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would sue. And I think that the better question is, what paperwork do we fill out for commendations?
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, like, let's say someone in a non-fictional world, you know, had a heart attack, and a non-doctor goes up and starts giving CPR and mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. I mean, how far down on that slippery slope do you have to go before you start taking on liability? Because I think generally, you know, the courts and the law is going to give an exception for emergency care where there's no alternative. I don't know if you saw the movie Sully, where, you know, it was interesting in the movie because, you know, this pilot does this unbelievably heroic thing and all these lives are saved. Yet there are investigations on did he, you know, perform at the standard of care necessary. So it's you can see something like that kind of happening here. And it just to me, it would be a sad thing for this engineer to be like heavily criticized when under those circumstances.
Yeah, we were in war. She stayed with the ship when she could have bailed out herself.
That's right.
And there's provision with in California, at least with some of our maritime requirements, that if you or your vessel's in a collision or like some accident, and you're the captain, you're the master of it, you're protected by a Good Samaritan Act for rendering aid to people. And if, okay, chief engineer could be the third or fourth person in command of a starship. If they're that far down the food chain, like if they lost the captain, the first officer, the second officer, she might be the one in charge.
Yeah.
And like, so she might have been exercising her responsibilities as the acting captain.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd think that there would be safe harbors for things like that.
Yeah, it's, again, what medals do we give her for not letting 10 people die?
Exactly, exactly.
Which is, again, pure Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's just everything that happens on that scene with her reaction, it's classic. What, I mean, like, you're a lifelong fan as well. Like, what struck you about the themes of the show?
So one thing that was a new thing that I kind of liked a lot was the introduction of the Red Angel.
Yes.
I mean, that's like an entirely, I can't think of any Star Trek where there's like this abstract concept that's like lurking around in the series that all of a sudden, you know, is taking larger and larger life. It's unfolding what the Red Angel is as each episode progresses. That was interesting to me. I do think that I love the first episode because it did go back to classic Star Trek. Like, you go through space and you find this random thing going on and it has no real clear explanation as to why it's occurred, and problems flow from it. I liked that a lot. I thought there was a funny, subtle joke in the first episode that I loved because it did have like kind of a wink and a nod back to the first series, because when Pike and his crew comes on, he says to the woman with him, "Oh, you're wearing the red shirt."
I caught that too.
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, they, yes.
But then the one in the red shirt isn't the first one to die.
No, it was the jerk who rightfully, yeah. I mean, which is also a little weird that the society could be so advanced and have somebody that condescending and jerkish.
Yeah.
But spend less time mansplaining and like keep your eye on what you're doing and be be a good team player, and like he wasn't, and Berman's still upset. He dies.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, it's like she doesn't look at him and go like he's a jerk. You know, she's like, oh, it's like doesn't want him to die.
She's doing everything she can.
Which again, pure Star Trek.
Yeah, the heroism in the show too, and you know, Pike kind of you know coming back and all that. I thought that was terrific.
One of the things that struck me, it's very difficult to have a story with conflict that has no villain.
Yeah.
And there's like, they're not fighting anything. They're trying to solve a mystery and solve problems. And there's adventure in doing it. And that's brilliant. It's so hard to pull that off.
It's really cool when it's, you know, when there's just a storyline problem that has to be solved. And it's an unexplainable problem. Like you, it's kind of like a detective mystery. Like we don't know why this happened or how she survived with all those people for all so long. And then how do you get off the, you know, the asteroid or whatever it was?
Well, it's an interesting juxtaposition to the original motion picture and Star Trek IV.
Yeah.
Because Star Trek, the motion picture, we have V'ger, and which again, it's solving the problem, but it's drawn out. I'm like, sure, it's visually impressive, but it's just like you get lost in it.
Yeah, it's just it's not as fun. The storytelling just wasn't as good.
On the flip side, four is basically the same thing.
Right. Yeah.
But they throw time travel in, and it's the best of the original movies.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I think I would agree with that.
Even though
Khan's
second to Khan.
Khan's pretty good.
I do love that a lot. But again, that's clear bad guy as opposed to just solving a problem.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And Discovery's solving a mystery.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Eden's like that too, right?
Yeah. Which let's pivot to New Eden, where we have people who were basically rescued in a church during a nuclear attack in 2053, and they are taken to someplace in the Beta Quadrant, so it would take a long time to get there at maximum warp, and they basically rebuild kind of like a mid-19th century...
Yeah. It almost feels like a Quaker type of environment, you know, very, very simple and basic, doing what you need to survive.
Do you think they rejected trying to do more because of what happened in World War III?
No, the way I took it was they were really stripped down when they got there, and their ability to generate power and to, you know, actually make use of the few computers that went with them, it just wasn't available to them. And so they had to kind of restructure how their life was.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, we take for granted, it's like, go make a light bulb. How?
Yeah, or yes, you know, like I told my kids the other day that when I met my wife that we didn't have cell phones, and like, how did you live?
You know? Stop it, Daddy! You're scaring me about the 1990s.
What's a pager?
Let me tell you about the 80s before we had internet.
That's right.
I didn't have an email until college.
Let me introduce you to this great video game called Pong.
You're scaring me. And like they went back to like Little House on the Prairie type.
They really did. They really did.
You would think, again, we don't see a lot, but it's like, are there streams? Could they do hydropower? Like, what do they have?
But they're, I mean, generally speaking in the episode, they're surviving and they're happy.
Yeah.
Right? And they have a system of organization. I mean, you know, from a legal perspective, they have a system of organization and a hierarchy where, you know, people are coloring within the lines. They're mm-hmm. not, there's not, you know, unlawful behavior. There's not, it's a very respectful, collaborative community. A
borderline theocracy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Which was, it was interesting to go like, we don't know which is the right religion, so we just pulled from everything.
Right, but the theocracy in the show, as I heard it, was built to make it inclusive. Mm-hmm. In other words, it was the way, by making this multi-theistic religion or environment, it basically made everyone feel like they were part of the same body of rules and social mores.
Yeah, then, and if everyone has to work together to live,
yeah,
it's like, well, we're going to have to grow food. you know, it's we're not raising cattle because we don't have anything like that. So we're living off the land.
The one thing I thought was weird is they didn't refer to it as the Prime Directive.
Yeah, when they General Order 1.
General Order 1.
Yeah, and that, I don't know if it was just a creative statement.
I don't know.
And there's one of my friends on Twitter raised the issue of whether or not the Prime Directive would apply to them.
Right, because they were...
From Earth.
From Earth.
Granted, pre-First Contact, but they're still human. Like, so does that...
Yeah.
Sure, they're a pre-warp society, but like when Voyager ran into people who had been kidnapped by aliens, they didn't go...
Well, but before they went down, they didn't necessarily know that, right?
Agreed.
So that was the issue. It was before they went down. And they had to... You know, they just didn't know. Because once they're down there, they don't really refer to General Order Number 1. That's why, like, I was really conflicted at the very end... when Pike gives the guy that big power source. Like, I was like, you know, I'm not sure. Like, my instinct was that's gotta violate the Prime Directive. But I think the fact that they were humans already maybe makes that not as significant.
I would agree. And we don't know if they upped the technology or gave them something that would have been concurrent to what existed in 2053. So there's a little bit of that. I did like the fact that the technology they had for over 200 years was still working.
Yeah, that was cool.
And the helmet cam. And I was excited to see what's on the footage.
Yeah.
And the fact that we have a Red Angel on video.
Right.
I was like, okay, I like the mystery aspect.
Right, how there's this unknown thing, and now you're getting a sense that maybe it's not so nice a thing.
Yeah, or
maybe it is, and it's misunderstood. And
that they kept all those people from being nuked. Did they say what town they were from in the United States?
I don't remember them mentioning that.
I don't remember them saying that either, other than it was, you know, right before, I mean, World War III was beginning.
Right.
And the fact they touched that, and it's, you know, 30 some years away from our time, which is kind of the Star Trek tradition of far enough in the future that
right
we'll eventually get there and then make fun of it. I mean, I'll be in my 70s, but still.
Sure, still.
It's like those who watched in the 60s and laughed at the idea of the eugenics wars in the 1990s. It's mm-hmm. It's there. Again, I really enjoyed that episode because of the mystery feel to it.
Yeah, I just liked, again, it was very similarly constructed to Brother, right? Because there's this thing that happens out in space. No one really has a clear understanding as to why, but it creates this set of problems that they kind of have to figure out, you know, how to deal with. I was not as enamored with this other storyline that's developing around kind of the dark matter.
With Tilly?
Yeah.
Her getting zapped?
Yeah.
I like where it's going in a point of light.
Yeah, but the way it was set up was not...
It's like, eh.
Yeah.
Even though I did like her getting the epiphany on how to solve the problem.
That was cool.
And going up to the bridge and, you know, in sick bay wear. You know,
and then insisting that they do it that way when all hope is lost.
And everyone's like, okay, we'll listen to her.
Yeah.
I'm like, again, we'll give her the benefit of the doubt. It seems plausible.
Well, it's kind of like there's no downside because everyone's going to die anyway. It's
like, we have less than an hour and she seems to have an idea. Let's go with it.
That's right. I mean, it's a super dangerous idea where everyone could die, but...
That's all we got.
Yeah, let's run with it.
We're putting everything on black. Let's go. And it worked. I mean, like, the interplay. So we have the helmsman, and I don't remember her name. You know, she says, I've had my pilot's license since I was 12. And
right.
The way she says it, it's like so playful and confident. It's like, you gave her something to do.
Right.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just... Again, and I'm a big fan of when Saru's in charge.
I just think, you know, they had these kind of gimmicky things like sensing fear and this and that. And one thing I liked about this episode is they made fun of that gimmicky thing. Yeah. And he's like, does any of this surprise you? Like, really? Like, is anyone surprised about this?
Nope, our bad, sorry.
And to me, that was the writer's way of saying, that was a dumbass decision. Like, why do we need that?
Again, they were getting their sea legs at the beginning. Right. And, Doug Jones is so good at doing those type of characters, whether it's Shape of Water or Pan's Labyrinth or, you know, pick one.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah.
He's cool. Here's an interesting question about, did the Discovery have a duty to help those people on New Eden? And what's your thought? And I have a theory.
You tell your theory first.
Okay. I don't think they had a legal duty, because when you look at the rules with the Coast Guard, which in dealing with distress signals, their mandate is perform any and all acts necessary to rescue and aid persons and protect and save property. But the key word is a may before that. So I don't think it's required, because if it was like, hey, this would get us destroyed, or hey, we can't get there in time, you do have command discretion that way of saying, yeah, like, we can't do it. But on the flip side, being Starfleet, and going, well, we could let all of these, you know, basically humans from Earth die horribly, and there's no way to warn them, and we can just watch them die, or we could save them. And again, being the good guys, the options to go save them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a continuum here of where you have to, like, there's probably a duty to investigate to see what's going on and figure out what the options are. But then is there a duty to save, which is a little bit different? You know, at the end of the episode, like, everyone's going to die if we try this one thing to try and save the people down there. You know, you always think of Spock's comments, right? Needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. But I'm not sure there's a duty at that point.
Yeah. Agreed. Other than, we got a call for help.
Right.
So we're going to go check it out, because we're not going to leave them.
Right. But once again, you know, Pike, humans over rules, you know? Like, he even says it there, right? He says, you know, like, we're not going to leave people behind. That's just not what we're going to do.
Well, then when he gets injured, it's saving a kid from a phaser overloading.
Right, right, right.
Okay. Again, explains how he ultimately ends up in the chair. But it's like that's all of the qualities we want in that hero captain.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, not afraid. He'll take the lead. You know, lead by example, and also make hard calls. Plus, it's fun watching him investigate.
Yeah, it is fun watching him investigate.
Because you look at the cage, and you know, like that episode is very cerebral and kind of dull. And when we saw him in the 2009 movie, it's like, I didn't get enough of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree with that.
And so, like, it's like, we get our Pike.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really enjoying the development of Pike in the season two.
Now, let's talk about A Point of Light, which has a bunch of issues. And you raised one on the Klingon side. What did you catch?
Well, so the thing that I caught that really kind of stuck out to me is we learned in that episode that the queen, who's now named herself Mother, that she has had a baby but didn't tell the father. And there's this very awkward moment with some of the other Klingon people saying, I've hid the secret from you long enough, and kind of takes them into the chamber, and there's this, you know, bassinet with the baby. And I haven't looked at the law on this, but I can imagine that there's, you know, legal problems with having a baby and not telling, well, I should say, and intentionally hiding the fact that there's a baby, you know, that the mom had a baby, and not even notifying the dad.
Yeah, that's so complicated, because it's, he has rights too.
He has rights too, and the baby has rights, and no one's thinking about that either.
We don't even know if the child has a name yet, which
it didn't.
Because mom refers to the baby as it, and dad's reaction is like, it?
Exactly. Well, and given all the weird stuff that was done to him, like, you know, we know the baby was small. They say that in the episode, but what is the baby, I think, is going to be a really interesting part of the series development.
Yeah, because, again, this gets so weird and complicated, because when Ash was a POW, Laurel was sexually assaulting him.
And put him through all those, like, really dark procedures.
Yeah, and then grafting Vosk onto him is, again, that's torture and experimenting on POWs. All bad.
Lots of legal violations.
Don't know, like, who's biologically the father? Was it Vosk? Or was it Tyler after...
That's my point.
Yeah. Okay. And would he look more like the traditional Klingon? Because that's one of the thing that took me out of season one was their treatment of the Klingons.
Right.
And there were interviews with the original showrunner from the New York Comic Con before it aired. And his answer, I thought, was arrogant and condescending to fans, saying, oh, I wanted to do something different. It's like, the Klingon race is so established.
You got to kind of stick to certain basics.
It's like, you could have picked Tellarites. You could, I mean, just like with Enterprise, they spent a lot of time with Andorians, a race that had been ignored in the other series. Mm-hmm. You could have picked any other race. You could have made up a new one.
We haven't seen Romulans in a long time.
Yeah. Well, and also with this time period, they shouldn't because of...
Oh, that's right. That's right.
But it's like...
They could have introduced something entirely new, though.
Yeah, new would have been better.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's tough to watch the Klingons when we know the history of, like, the foreheads and the way they behave.
Right.
And now they're trying to retcon things back into, like, the correct timeline with... Like, the D7 battlecruisers are starting to be built.
Right.
Klingons are growing hair again. So the showrunners are clearly trying to fix things.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But, that was the thing with season one that would always pull me out of it.
Yeah.
And
they're still trying to find how do the Klingons fit into the narrative they're trying to develop here. Like, it's still, I mean, I thought it was interesting. The legal issue is interesting. The unification of the different clans and all that's kind of interesting, but it almost seems like it would be a spin-off series from Star Trek than being Star Trek itself.
I don't know if they were just trying to resolve some loose strings so they could get, you know, Section 31 involved with Giorgio and get Tyler off of Kronos.
Yeah. The deception is also an interesting thing that might, you know, at the very end, the deception and, you know, what's going to happen. Because we all know that at some point they're going to, you know, the Klingons are going to find out that she lied to them about, you know, killing the two people.
Yeah, it's, and the Klingons ultimately end up with hostilities towards the Federation.
Right.
So, you know, peace doesn't last for that long.
Right.
So, again, it's just little teases, but they're trying to course correct, at least in my analysis.
Yeah.
There were a couple other issues, I think, with patients' rights and Spock.
Yep.
I love the actress playing Amanda.
Yeah, she's great.
And watching Berman and Amanda together, it's a healthy mother-daughter relationship, which is nice.
Well, and you can see a little bit in that relationship, you know, why Berman is as assertive as she is, because she has a role model, you know, of a take command person, which is, I mean, it's really cool to see it.
Yeah, healthy parental relationships.
Yeah.
It's like, oh God, I love this. And again, it's just, the character of Amanda has always been very endearing and strong. And,
yeah.
And they're hitting all of those.
They're hitting all those right, yeah.
Which is great. the issue of like trying to get access to Spock's medical file.
Did they explain who the other person was that was on the ship? Because remember they said there were two people on the ship?
They said the captain.
Oh, the captain.
So he probably just shuttled her out there and
took off.
Then took off.
Got it.
That's my guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, you don't have to put everything on screen, but you know, right. Sometimes you wonder like, hey, what just happened?
Yeah, I was just kind of like, well, what? You know, why didn't the other person at least hail or?
Thanks.
I mean, there's often random characters who come on for a communication thing. It's like, hi, this is my big moment. Nice to see y'all. I'm out.
Peace.
Peace out.
Like,
yeah.
It's like we didn't see Sarek leave.
Right.
You know, we kind of had to figure that out that he left.
Yeah.
It's little moments like that are just funky.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I don't think, did he even he interacted with Berman.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Because again, just those moments of like, huh?
Yeah, weird.
Weird. Love it, but weird. The issue, and I think we'll get this up in some further episodes with Spock. So he, I think, voluntarily checked himself into a mental hospital.
That's right. And it was kept quiet.
Okay. Understandably so, patient rights. But then they refused to give Amanda his mom.
His medical files.
Yeah. And if this is issues of paperwork and HIPAA, and again, not every point I remember on the law on this stuff, but if he designated her as the next of kin.
Right, but he's not dead yet. Right?
True, true.
And one of the things they said somewhere in the episode that he was not. Like, he was not incapacitated.
Mm-hmm.
So, at his age, you know, with being a fully formed adult, I think the rights change.
They do, and on, at least on, like, our medical forms, we could say who we want to have power of attorney to medical decisions. Maybe he listed somebody else.
Yeah, we don't know.
We don't know. So, I mean, like, on some levels, I get her being told no, but saying, like, oh, he killed three people. Oh, really? That's a new one.
Yeah, exactly. In some sort of, crazy rage.
Yeah. If he did have diminished capacity, that would be, again, we don't have enough facts to get into the insanity defense, but that's one of those classic things from Star Trek of Scotty gets injured by a woman, develops a resentment towards women, so they take him to a strip club, and then he kills the stripper. And it turns out it's the ghost of Jack the Ripper. It's like funky storytelling, really weird plot, but like pure insanity defense for Scotty.
Yeah, well, I mean, the interesting thing about Spock, right, is so much of him is driven by pure logic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is a possibility that his emotional side took over and he acted. But from a pure logic perspective, you would have to think if that's the principle he's operating, there would be a reason why that was occurring if he in fact did it.
Yeah, and they would have to, again, diminished mental capacity or the lack of empathy. There's all of those factors are medical decisions or medical treatments and conditions.
That's right.
That could go to the insanity defense.
Sure.
But this sounds more like it's Section 31 just kidnapping him.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's held there, and that's where we'll have him rescued.
Well, we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, boy, are they setting up this? What is Spock going to be like? Issue, like, I mean, every episode, you know, like I've been like, okay. And then, you know, then this whole thing on tying the Red Angel to him and his childhood and his disputes with Bert. I mean, like those, it's great.
Yeah, we haven't seen anything like this in the Star Trek series before.
Right.
Like main character focused, it's an arc. Because it's different than TNG or maybe the closest would be Deep Space Nine, which had a bunch of long-lasting arcs, especially in Series 7. With the Dominion War and everything that happened, I think that might be the closest.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other one, you know, that was kind of a recurring set of issues was the Deanna Troi romance.
Okay,
right. I mean, it's not the same thing, but there was kind of this recurring activity that was part of the larger storyline. But I think this is, like, when I was saying, like, you know, they're kind of getting back to the exploring new worlds and new mm-hmm. civilizations and kind of talking about that, this other Red Angel storyline is kind of a nice overlay. That's kind of a, it's a new change while still kind of adhering to traditional Star Trek underneath.
Which is a really creative approach.
I'm like, yeah, hat, I agree with you.
Hats off to the writing team
that
put this together.
Because I definitely feel like this season, I'm feeling like, okay, when it comes out each week, I'm like, okay, I want to go see what happened.
I'm excited for Thursdays.
Yeah.
Which is, again, I was like that when I was younger. College and law school, I looked forward to Voyager and Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And again, like, everyone has those moments. Well, those of us of a certain age when it was new.
Right.
Compared to those who discover it and are able to binge it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which,
trying to think, what are the other legal issues that come up in this episode?
Well, I think there's something that could be said for Tilly that does go to the insanity defense.
Right.
Because, okay, if she was truly hallucinating because of being unsound mind, that is a good reason for her to be taken out of the command program and get the treatment she needs.
Right, or some, yeah, there's some medical problem mm-hmm. that's interfering with her ability to think clearly. The one thing I had an issue with, though, on that issue mm-hmm. was she's sitting in the chair making decisions, knowing she's hallucinating, and she's not telling people.
You think with all that's going on, and especially with the culture of openness that Pike is encouraging,
right?
You think they would say something. On the flip side, this doesn't go on for like 5 or 6 episodes.
No, it's done there.
Yeah, it's like it started at the end of the last one when she realized, oh, that person's dead. And I'm seeing things.
Right.
And it goes like halfway through, you know, the following episode. So like it's addressed quickly.
Yeah. And I do like, one thing I like about Tilly is kind of, I mean, she's not a kid, but she's very immature compared to the rest of the characters. And that growth and maturity is like a new, you know, professional, essentially. It does add kind of an interesting storyline to it. And this conflict that I think we see in normal management kind of environments, which is people's ambition versus their own limitations at any moment in time. And how much will they actually talk about their own limitations when they're very ambitious?
Yeah, that is an interesting balancing act because, again, having recently done all of my, you know, professional competency, you know, requirements for the compliance date.
Yeah.
It's like, ah, yeah, that could go to competency issues.
Exactly.
In a very big way.
Right, like, yeah, in a legal context, you know, somebody saying, I've got to go try my first $1 billion case, having never tried a case before, right? And it's because they're so ambitious, they want that storyline, but at the same time, you know, maybe you should be trying a couple $1,000 cases first.
I'm not saying you have to start with dog bite, but
yeah, it's not. It wouldn't hurt.
It's experience is good. Like build up. It's yeah. It's like practice. It's called the practice of law for a reason.
That's right. It's not the perfection.
Nope. You can malpractice very easily. Let's focus on eye on the ball here. There's a short trek with her. So the first one is her, and it's a lot of fun. So I'll
watch that.
Yeah, I'll check that one out. They started with her, and it was a good choice. Plus, the actress is fun to see on Instagram and in different interviews. Mm-hmm. And like the entire cast really does seem fun.
They do seem fun. So one thing that I'm interested in seeing in the next couple upcoming episodes is, you know, what happens to, I forget his name, the engineer who has the Talagridius and he runs the spore drive?
Stamets, yeah.
Yeah, what happens with him? Because I kind of thought that engineer on the asteroid was being introduced and he's kind of saying he's going to go off to do other things and that we were going to get to know her better and she was going to take over that role. But it also seemed like they were hedging their bets and maybe having Tilly grow more as a character where she becomes the engineer.
Yeah, there is, we only have teases from commercials, because
right.
the engineer from the rescued ship, which was Hiawatha.
Yeah, it was the Hiawatha.
Yes, she's going to be back in according to the previews.
Right.
So I don't know how big of a role. I like her, and she's was it Reed? I like her.
I thought she was a really fun character.
She's a stand-up comedian.
Oh, is she? Yeah. She kind of has that dry presentation. I also like one of the things you see at the end of the third episode in the previews is this, you know, this parasite gets out of its containment and is surrounding Tilly's head.
Yeah,
like, and we don't know what's happening or how that happens or
like
what's
very
going on.
Blob-esque.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't think it's like the best CGI. There's probably, they could have depicted it with either a positive or a negative way, more than just like bubble wrap, but it's still pretty cool.
That, and if they did some weird goo that got into her hair, I'd feel so bad for her, because go scrub that out.
Yeah.
It's like, ew.
Here's a question on the upcoming episode. So, you know, one of my favorite episodes is The Trouble with Tribbles, right?
Yes.
Which is kind of a funny episode, but it's also got a little bit of drama to it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of another Star Trek episode where someone's tried to have this kind of iconic episode that just kind of still is true to the show, but also introduces some layers of comedy. And on this one in Discovery, it is such a serious like drama production. I've been struggling with how could they tweak that formula in a way to do something iconic like that.
Yeah, it's like the episode A Piece of the Action.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, Mud too.
Yeah, Mud. And except this version of Mud is pretty ruthless. And
it's pretty horrible.
Yeah, it's rude. He's a bad man. But, yeah, how do we work in a little comedy? Again, is it a fish out of water story? Like, how do we...
Something.
I have faith in the showrunners that...
Yeah.
And maybe it's going to be with Spock as, like, being the straight man.
Could be. Well, we'll see if they even do it. I mean, I think right now they really like being a drama. I think the show likes being a drama. It likes being an intense action film.
Mm-hmm.
The special effects are off the chain, right? I don't think there's any show that has special effects like that.
Agreed. And I have a buddy who does special effects, and he said when they were ramping up to do Discovery last year, there was like a, I don't want to use the phrase arms race, but there was a lot of people interested in being involved. Mm-hmm. And it shows, because it's...
It absolutely shows. I mean, for, you know, a weekly series, the quality of the special effects is extraordinary.
Yeah, and I love it.
I do too.
I'm grateful to have Star Trek again.
Yeah.
Each week, and whatever spin-offs they want to do.
I heard they're going to do a spin-off.
With Giorgio.
Giorgio, yeah.
And which will be Section 31 themed, I guess.
Yeah, something like that.
That's all that I know, or all that I've heard, and again, I'll be grateful when it airs.
Yeah.
And I'll be there, I'll get it to you.
Watch it.
Yeah, I'll have popcorn and be ready to go, because I'm grateful to have Star Trek each week. So with that, Neil, you have a lovely home. Thank you for...
Thanks for coming over.
Always fun, and look forward to, if all goes well, we'll have a con or two in the next few months, and... Until then, everyone, stay geeky, America.